As Christians, we need to be clear about the world's depraved dicta on human sexuality. It's good to be clear about what we're against, but there's more to the story. There has to be.
Dr. Scott Murray, talking about his presentation at the 2017 Fall Issues, Etc., Making the Case Conference.
The God-given gift of holy marriage with all of its blessings and benefits must be encouraged and extolled among us. God's gift of marriage teaches that sex is not for us, but for the other, and for the other alone. Exclusive heterosexual monogamy is God's way. It's the best way. Especially for our own children and grandchildren, Christians have to build the case for God's gift of marriage.
You can meet and hear Dr. Scott Murray, Making the Case for Christian Marriage, November 10th and 11th in Houston, Texas. Learn more at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
But even setting aside the law, the more fundamental issue is that the university is supposed to be a place where we train virtuous citizens. It's where the next generation of Americans are equipped to contribute to and live in a diverse and free society filled with many, often contrary voices. Our legal heritage, upon which the founders crafted the Bill of Rights, taught that reason and knowledge produce the closest approximation of truth. And from truth may, hopefully, often arises justice. But reason requires discourse and frequently argument. And that is why the free speech guarantee is found not just in the First Amendment, but it permeates our institutions, our traditions, and our Constitution in this free, unique, exceptional land. The jury trial, the right to cross-examine witnesses, the speech and debate clause, the very art and practice of lawyering, all of these are rooted in the idea that speech, reason, and confrontation are the very bedrock of a good society. In fact, these practices are designed to ascertain what is the truth, and from that truth, good policies and actions can be founded.
That's Attorney General Jeff Sessions speaking yesterday at Georgetown University's Law School while protesters took a knee outside and protested not only his speech, but apparently what he had to say there seems to be pretty boilerplate ideas on freedom of speech, which I think he's right, runs through every freedom that we exercise here in the United States. Why is the freedom of speech increasingly held in such disdain? We're going to answer that question among others. Joy Pullman joins us on this Wednesday afternoon. She's a mother of four children, managing editor of The Federalist, and author of the book The Education Invasion, and a recent column for The Federalist titled Sessions Teaches Free Speech 101 and the Media's Reaction Proves They Need It. Joy, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thank you.
Why is freedom of speech held in such disdain nowadays?
Well, I think for almost every major, you know, problem, there's lots of reasons that go into creating it. But I think, you know, one of the more surface ones is simply that people don't like to hear things that they don't agree with, and we're becoming increasingly intolerant of, you know, sitting and listening to other people's views and sifting through them. And I think that relates to some deeper problems. One of them just might be we're increasingly unable to know how to sift through ideas. We haven't really been taught that typically in our schools and in our upbringing. You know, our parents and our teachers often don't work us through ideas and teach us how to sort out what is true from what is false. So, you know, really a lot of people might feel just really incapable of doing that, and so their reaction is just emotional rather than rational, an adult and a mature. But as well, I mean, there's, of course, political reasons for doing that. You know, the folks who tend to favor coercing other people or see more of that is more acceptable politically, they want to present the view that their idea is united or triumphant and more predominant in society than it really is. And so when people break that perception, you know, of course, they are going to react negatively.
There was something that Attorney General Sessions said there, and that is the relationship between the freedom of speech and the pursuit of truth. Is part of the reason that freedom of speech is held in disdain today is because truth itself as a concept is also under attack?
Absolutely. And I'm going to start, I mean, we're I'm trying to think about how to think about this because, you know, postmodern theory is really complex, but it's kind of, you know, what's underlying these, it's the complex thing that that's underlying a lot of these weird, you know, things that seem weird to people. Why on earth would you, you know, be kneeling in front of government officials? Why can't we just talk about our ideas? You know, that seems something most reasonable people understand. But underlying that, of course, really, if you abandon the search for truth or really the idea that there can be a truth that we can know and discover as human beings, that's one of our fundamental faculties. This is a really foundational idea to Western culture. But there's, of course, nowadays, there has been since the beginning of time, competing idea to that, which is that there isn't really a truth. And so then if you don't have that objective reality that applies to us all and that we need to search for and talk about how to apply it to ourselves to be in conformity with it, the only alternative really is ultimately power struggles, you know, the weaker oppress the stronger. And so that's really what our society is, we're really having a debate about those two underlying worldviews when we talk about free speech.
Why is it important for us to understand what free speech is and isn't? I think a lot of people think that free speech means that no one should ever disagree with me, or that that people should be able to say whatever they want without any kind of argument being offered in return.
Absolutely. Well, there's kind of two poles about free speech, and then both of them, you know, are wrong. They're the extremes. See, one of them says you shouldn't be able to allow to say a wide variety of things that conflict with basically, you know, prevailing political correctness. And then on the other extreme, we have people who say, well, free speech means you can say or do anything you want. You know, you can get naked in the public square. You can shout expletives at people. You can lie about people. You know, you can incite violence, so on and so forth. And neither of them is really an accurate conception of free speech, both as reasonable people and important thinkers have come up with the idea, as well as our legal system. You know, it doesn't define it really either of those ways. So, I mean, America and the West generally has a really long tradition of thinking about this. And again, neither of those two poles are what we've come down to. What we come down to is, well, really, it's one of the key things that's really important to note is that the First Amendment is a restriction on government. So it's not a restriction on private individuals. So what that means is government cannot prosecute you for saying something vulgar or something that is against, you know, the ruling regime. But that doesn't mean that your fellow citizens can't respond in the ways they feel and hold you accountable. So these folks taking a knee during the national anthem on the side of the football game, you know, the NFL has a right to either permit or tell their employees that's an acceptable thing to do wearing company uniforms, you know, during company events. It's because they're a private group. The government can't say that, but the NFL could. So there's that really important distinction about what the First Amendment applies to. But also, it's really important to understand that there's many things that people could or want to say that they legally can't. For the most prominent, you know, examples of this are you can't say things that endanger national security. You can't commit treason. Or second of all, you can't, you know, incite people to violence. You can't shout fire in a crowded theater. You also can't lie about people. You can't libel or slander them.
Well, you can, but you're going to face legal consequences.
Without facing legal consequences, right.
So do you think it would be you speak about Jeff Sessions doing Freedom of Speech 101. It just strikes me as tremendously ironic that if that is, in fact, what he's doing, that is what his opponents outside who are decrying free speech need to hear the most, isn't it?
Yeah, he gave her, I wrote in the article that, like you mentioned, it was really a basic kind of middle school level overview of why free speech is important and why we have it in our society, so on and so forth. So I read it and I thought, you know, oh my goodness, why is he even saying this? You know, and of course the cynical answer could be, well, you know, it's kind of becoming popular for conservatives to go kind of provoke protesters. And then they get to be at the center of the media for the next couple of days, you know, by having people throw bottles at, you know, at them and so on and so forth. But also, you know, when you read the reactions, he was speaking at Georgetown Law School, one of the premier law schools of the country. And the students and the faculty reaction to him was kind of shockingly displayed a very, very poor understanding of just, I mean, the law about free speech. We're talking basic stuff like what you and I have just been talking about. So, I mean, maybe there actually, you know, there is a need for that regardless of whether that's really Sessions' purpose in doing the speech or not.
Joy Pullman is our guest. We're talking about Attorney General Jeff Sessions, free speech and the media. She's managing editor of The Federalist when we come back. Not only are we prevented from spreading falsehood or committing crimes through speech, free speech doesn't necessarily mean that when someone says something, you have to listen. We'll talk about that after this.
LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.
Emily finally had to face the truth. Her church choir was a mess.
Katie Schuerman from her new audiobook, House of Living Stones.
Sure, they'd managed to turn out a few decent choral offerings for Sunday worship every now and then, but their confidence and morale were presently hanging lower than pants on a wrapper.
You can purchase and download an audio version of the novel House of Living Stones at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. House of Living Stones by Katie Schuerman.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Hey, Todd. What have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joy Pullman is our guest. We're talking about Attorney General Jeff Sessions, free speech, and the media. Joy, I want you to, since the obvious context of this, with everybody taking a knee now, pretty soon everyone's just going to be crawling around on their knees for whatever reason they want to. Just as someone doesn't have to watch an NFL game wherein players take a knee during the national anthem in protest, exercising their free speech, by the way. You also don't have to listen when people say things you disagree with. Isn't that part of free speech as well?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I actually do think that we, you know, as citizens in, you know, a democratic republic where we are supposed to come together to, you know, negotiate and decide how we're going to govern ourselves, at some point, you know, in that process, we do need to listen to people who disagree with us, or we can't actually be, you know, fully participating citizens helping to run our own country. But that doesn't mean that every time somebody has a different opinion than us, you need to stop there and listen. We all have other kinds of competing responsibilities at other times in our lives that would preclude us from doing that. Or sometimes, you know, just out of basic self-control, you will know, look, this is going to make me unreasonably angry, you know, for the sake of, you know, my character and what I might do in response, I should just, you know, take myself out of the situation. So there's, I mean, all kinds of decent reasons that one might not choose to listen to something. But at the same time, you know, at some point we do need to do that, and there are times in which to uphold our duties as citizens, that is something that we do need to do.
What do you make of the phrase, and we hear it quite often nowadays, even from, as you say, law professors who should know better, hate speech is not free speech? What do you make of that phrase?
Well, the problem with that idea is that the idea of hate speech is really dependent on the person who is listening. In an earlier article, some people literally have said that having the name Becky, the nickname Becky, is racist. You know, some people have said that having, mentioning that it's good for kids that their biological parents be married, that is also, you know, apparently can be hate speech. So there, I mean, of course, there's obviously things, you know, that are rude and unkind and uncharitable to other human beings that God has made, but, you know, the definition for that term is very slidey. And so it's not a very good basis for either law or for our public discussions. The capacity of some people to get offended, their offense gives them the ability to control the conversation, then we're going to increase the likelihood that people are going to be offended as basically a tactic to have power over the conversation. So not only is that just not socially a good idea, also, you know, in law, people are allowed to say, you know, they're allowed to voice and act and nonviolently in support of, you know, horrible groups like the KKK and so forth. And that's something we protect in American society, because the alternative is government coming in and making these sorts of finely tuned decisions about what is and what is not acceptable speech. And that inevitably tends to lead to tyranny.
Finally, did President Trump help by suggesting recently that those who are exercising free speech, by whatever definition, should lose their jobs? It seems counterproductive to me. But you also point out the president also can exercise his right to free speech.
Really, the ultimate, you know, judge of that is you and I, as well as the rest of the American public, right? We all know that the president, you know, says a lot of kind of wild things. But again, where I really am going to start caring is if he started using the power of government, you know, to prosecute private individuals for saying things about that government that he doesn't like. You know, so, I mean, shooting from his hip is something that he does, and it might not be advisable depending on who you're talking to politically. But what I really care about, again, is how he uses the power of government. And so far, he's done nothing. It just seems to be kind of a tempest in the teapot. Some people say he just says stuff like that in order to get a good media week. But I don't really know what's going on there. But again, what I really care about is how he uses the vast power of the government that he is the figurehead of.
With about 30 seconds, is there a way back to a basic 101 understanding of free speech on the part of most Americans?
I mean, I'm often a hopeful person, often not. I think there are things that we as individuals, as families, as you know, can do to uphold our citizenship responsibilities, to tell our children, to educate our fellow citizens and ourselves about what our rights are and what we need to do to preserve them. Because unless we do that, you know, we ultimately are letting our freedoms go. America is a self-governing nation, and we need to govern ourselves, and that includes knowing our rights and defending them and standing up for them.
Joy Pullman is a mother of four children, managing editor of The Federalist. She's author of the book The Education Invasion and a recent column for The Federalist titled Sessions Teaches Free Speech 101 and Media Reaction Proves They Need It. You can read that and find a link to Education Invasion under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Joy, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you.
In Hour 2 of Issues, Etc. on this Wednesday, we're going to begin a four-part series with Pastor Paul McCain, General Editor of Concordia, the Lutheran Confessions, talking about the past, present, and future of confessional Lutheranism. Today, Luther and those around him as the right man in the right place at the right time.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Hello, this is Pastor Kevin Golden of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. The saints at Village Lutheran are proud to be part of the Issues Etc. 300. sharing in their Christ-centered, cross-focused proclamation of the gospel. If you find yourself in St. Louis, join us on Sundays at 8:15 and 10:45 for the Divine Service, 9:30 for Bible study and Sunday school, as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. Or visit us on the web at www.villagelutheranchurch.org.
The Law Assumed Sermon, the Gospel Afterthought Sermon, the God Loves You Anyway Sermon. I've written an article in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled An Updated Listener's Guide to the Pulpit. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. Matt Richard details his journey from folk Lutheranism to confessional Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal.